Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I am your host, Fred Monroe. I'm glad you are with us today. As most of you know, and I've told you this many, many times, and I appreciate the fact that you still stick around to listen to me say this, is the goal on Central Coast Voices is to do the best we can to look at credible, valid information and insights from diverse members of our community. We want to address how today's choices will affect tomorrow's community and how sometimes lack of choices will affect our community on a daily basis and the long-term ramifications of change in our society. We're going to talk about a topic that is easy to explain and hard to explain all at once. We're going to talk about peace circles and how they can create change. And want to remind you of a couple of things that we're looking at as the basis of this. Eleanor Roosevelt, for those of you who don't remember Eleanor Roosevelt, you should. Anyway, had said, it isn't enough to talk about peace. One must believe in it. And it isn't enough to believe in it. One must work at it. Lately, there's been a lot of newfound interest in peacemaking and conflict resolutions because we are finding conflicts in our society in ways that we had not anticipated having them anymore or still. And how we want to look at those things is really a process that that sometimes is easy to understand for some, hard to understand for others, and we want to take a look at what that is, and specifically a concept called creating peace circles. Really, it's an invitation to learn how to interact with each other in ways that are more constructive. It's designed with a flexible methodology to communicate and create change. Circles are used in a variety of settings, some at workplaces, justice system, government, schools, families, and communities. I'll remind you, and we'll talk to our guests about this, that in places we may not think that that working on a peace circle to facilitate change or understanding might take place, that may be in prisons. It may be with police departments working with law enforcement among themselves. We really want to learn and look at how this decision-making process affects how our society functions and how we can improve it. My guests today are Dr. Evelyn Zellerer. She is the founder and director and trainer of an organization called Peace of the Circle, and Noreen Labarto, who is a board member of Ecologist in San Luis Obispo County, and she's a partner with Earth Design International. We want to learn about how the process of creating peace circles is going to affect us and help us to have a better understanding of what's going on in our world. This is a discussion we'd like you to be party of if you would care to join us, and that is by giving us a call at area code 805-781-3875. Remind you now that if you live in 805, you still have to dial 805 now. So it's 805-781-3875. And mark your calendar as we get into this also, because there is a conference that Evelyn is going to speak at on the 3rd of November, and we'll tell you about that during the program. Evelyn, I want to make sure, since you're calling in, are you with us here?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Yes, I just, technology sometimes challenges me, so I wanted to make sure this was fine. We probably a good starting point would be, can you give us the elevator speech version of what creating a peace circle environment is?
Beautiful. Well, thank you, Fred. I'm very honored to be a guest on your show. It's wonderful to be here and connecting with all our listeners. So as you said, I just want to reiterate, you know, what are peace circles? And my definition is that circles are an intentionally designed yet flexible methodology for communication, connection, and change. So we literally sit in a circle. It could be two or more people, and we engage in dialogue. And the topic and content can literally be almost anything. And as you mentioned a moment ago, we use circles for a variety of purposes and in many, many different settings. So there's lots to say, as you mentioned.
Well, it's good. We have an hour. Keep talking.
Oh, I could do an hour. What I'm curious about is how much to dive into the methodology itself. And really the place to start is the foundation of it, which is the teachings and the underlying values and principles of it. So the methodology itself is quite simple. Simple and profound. What I love about trainings and workshops is I get to bring people behind the curtain of what are we actually doing when we sit in a circle? Why do we remove all the furniture and the tables? And why are we using a talking piece? So there's many, many tools that we use in this methodology, but it's really all based on a philosophy or a paradigm where we appreciate that we are all interconnected. We begin to break down the polarization of us and them, because really the reality is there is no us and them, it's just us. And there's many carriers of these teachings. We begin with an honoring of Indigenous peoples around the world, who all Indigenous nations have a form of sitting in circle and talking around the world. And they've kept these practices and traditions alive through generations, despite the genocide and the colonization. So we put our hands up to our Indigenous peoples. And at the same time, we recognize the ancientness of the circle itself. So what do you suppose the first circle for humans was?
I'm assuming that's not a rhetorical question. You have the answer.
What do you think, Fred?
It was probably a family.
Yes. And where do you think they sat?
On the ground.
Totally. Around what?
Hopefully around a fire, but it may have predated fire.
Absolutely.
I didn't know this was going to be a quiz, but go ahead. Thank you.
I love you. Yeah, well, I mean, it's this sort of a part of circle is, as I said, it's an intentionally designed methodology. And so it's very participatory. There's not a script. I can't come in and say, this is what we do every single time we sit in circle. It's very much a collaborative creation to meet the needs of the parties coming together, the purpose of why we're coming together and what we hope to accomplish. So I'm just, I couldn't help but model it. My professor hat came on there. Thanks for playing with me, Fred. So yes, really, the ancientness of circles are in and of themselves quite profound, and lots of teachings around that. And in brief, all of our ancestors have been sitting in circles for thousands and thousands and hundreds of thousands of years. So I've been very interested in this archetype of circle and how it is that through hundreds of thousands of years, humans knew to come together first with family and extended families, and then through clans and tribes and eventually through nations, that there was something that contributed to us in our humanity to sit together where we are in a circle, and the physicality of that circle that represents things like equality and non-hierarchical relations. It's contributed to us dynamically. And in my journey, this is the most powerful process that I have found in the world. So I'll pause there because there's lots and lots we can say about the teachings and the philosophy and this paradigm shift, because ultimately it is an invitation to a paradigm shift of how we relate and interrelate to one another within our families, in our communities, in our schools, in our workplaces, and in our nations, and again, across the world. Okay. It's a very big invitation that we're putting out to the world and to humanity at this point in time.
I may be starting a philosophical side of this that we might want to stay away from, and you can tell me at some point if we need to do that. But as I was listening to your comments, it occurred to me that because one of the misconceptions about your program is that it's somehow related to all of us children of the 60s who survived as quasi-hippies, and that's the perception of anything to deal with a discussion at a circle and dealing with what I used to refer to as a talking stick or a speaking stick, which I'm sure you'll talk about in a little bit more detail. But my real wonder is, it seems like that Indigenous people of North America and Indigenous peoples of the pre-Columbian era, in my mind, were very effective users of this kind of communication beyond the family. But if you talk to the average average American of European descent, there is this perception that this kind of activity is somehow just what all the hippies from the 60s are doing, or if you're a Native American, we know you're doing this. So I'm wondering where the concept got lost in pre-Renaissance and Renaissance Europe, and I hope I haven't opened Pandora's box here.
Of course you've opened Pandora's box. How fun is that? So, yes, it did get lost, so to speak, and it went underground and it was forgotten, but it's always been a part of us. And what I notice for all of us, no matter what nationality or race or culture or education, to varying degrees, it may be uncomfortable because we've gotten used to putting up barriers that we think are protection. And we've bought into the, what I would call, quite frankly, the lies of this reality that there's this enemy out there and this, you know, this different statuses of humanity, that certain races or cultures are more superior than others. And so it's uncomfortable because it's deep work. And so no matter, again, where you're coming from, this may be uncomfortable to drop the barriers literally, which is one of the reasons why we take away furniture, because we can hide behind the desk and the cell phones and the furniture. So you're asking, you know, where and when did it get lost? You know, we can talk about that at some length. I'm not sure exactly, and I think you pointed to some of the Renaissance and the Technical Revolution and whatnot, and the wars and technology. I mean, there's lots there. I haven't looked at the why of that. What my focus has been, I'm very, very pragmatic. And it's okay, so how do we do this? You know, given that we have, some of us have forgotten or not choosing it, my focus of my work in the company is to be an invitation to another possibility for us to engage. When people are ready and willing and choosing it, and to do that deep work, to remember who are we individually in terms of our values and what matters to us and how we want to show up in the world, and also collectively, how do we want to be together in the world? And we've had various experiments. We've had experiments of, you know, democracy and communism and socialism, and we've had experiments with Get Tough and war on crime, war on drugs. And we've been discovering those Get Tough and those wars on crimes and drugs, et cetera, are not working. We have huge recidivism rates. We have greater polarization, greater poverty. And so for me, it's, well, what if we tried in this complex current reality of our world to do this game or experiment, which is a profound invitation, of what if we actually tried to get along across our differences?
Yeah.
Well, and what if we used the best technology and tools and methodologies out there, with circles being one. It's not the only one, of course, but it's one contribution to a shift of how we can be in the world in a more peaceful, kinder way.
Yeah. Well, we're going to shift this to kind of a local look now. Doreen Labarto is here, and she is a board member of Ecologistics in San Luis Obispo, and she is one of the organizers of the Central Coast Bioneer Conference. So we probably all so get to talk about how the concept of working as a bioneer also fits in with what Evelyn is doing. And I apologize. I started the program just kind of on a stream of consciousness that was a little fast. Doreen's name is indeed Doreen, and I did say Noreen at first, and I apologize for that. Even though I think I've known you for 30 years,
we've
I apologize.
Known each other for
yeah,
a long time.
Yeah. Anyway, so how did you get involved in this process, and what's going on with you guys?
One of my professional task is to work in dispute resolution and in particular mediation. And I was asked by the Alternative Dispute Resolution Institute of British Columbia to speak in Vancouver, Canada in June. And at the institute, at the symposium, Evelyn was there. She was a keynote speaker along with the Attorney General of British Columbia. And it was wonderful because it opened my eyes. Of course, I speak about mediation from a very legal point of view, and this is how we do things. And And I was up there talking about new forms of mediation, in particular medical cannabis. And I was listening to Evelyn, and she started talking about peace circles. And the first thought I had was, okay, this is the type of thing that I remember participating with Indigenous people in British Columbia years ago. And then Evelyn went on to explain how it was being used in restorative justice. And as I heard the principles, in my mind, I was thinking, could we expand this in the land use and environmental arena? Because it's predominantly been used for criminal justice issues, family, and Evelyn mentioned a few other areas, and predominantly used outside of the United States. I mean, we're using it more for restorative justice here. And so Evelyn was putting on a two-day conference or a seminar, and the following month I went up for it, fell in love with it, actually participated in the Peace Circle, and having been in a mediation, both being a mediator and being part of a mediation, this was another type of tool that could be used for dispute resolution. And that's how I felt that it was very valuable, and using those concepts. You know, as you said, Fred, earlier, that we have so many divisions in this country and across the world. And so we need all the tools that we can get.
And a lot of them seem to get wider and not narrower.
They do. And so it was a matter of saying, you know, you have all these dispute resolution methods now. We need something else that might work in certain situations. And I just found it very fascinating and exploring how we can use that as part of land use and environmental collaboration and conflict resolution. I'm on the board of directors of Ecologistics, and I brought up Evelyn and how impressive she is and the work that she's accomplished around the world, including Northern Ireland and South Africa, in Brazil, I mean, all over the world. And we thought, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could offer this Peace Circle as an invitation? And so Evelyn has graciously agreed to come down, put on two sessions, November 2nd, which is a Friday, November 4th. And then on Saturday, November 3rd, we had the Central Coast Bioneers Conference. And so we actually have three wonderful days that are available if anybody wants to participate.
Thank you. And we'll talk more about, during the program, about what people can do to participate in that and what's involved for signing up for it. Evelyn, well, I'm sorry, I forgot one thing here, and that is to remind folks that if they'd like to be part of this discussion today, the phone number is 805-781-3875. And as I often do, I would encourage you, if you have any questions or comments that you want to share in the discussion, that you do that as early in the program as you possibly can. We've occasionally had to tell people that we didn't have time to put them on the air in the last few minutes of the program. Evelyn, the concept that one of the things that I find fascinating that that may be for some people a dichotomy, but it may also be a good way to represent what you do. And that is that working in the criminal justice system, both with people who are professionals in the criminal justice system and people who are involved in resolution of a crime or restitution or other areas, seems to be an area that I would not be skeptical of the effectiveness of this, but I'd be skeptical of how difficult it is to get cooperation from people who are involved in those conflicts. They tend not to be conflicts that are resolved in a good listening environment.
Yes, a very good question. And that's where my work is focused a lot on the justice area. I have a PhD in criminology, and so I've lived in the States and in Canada and worked globally, as Doreen so very generously mentioned. So it's an area dear to my heart. And yes, there are very, very deep challenges, of course. But it's working incredibly well and very effectively, because those that are in the system or come in contact with the system, including those on the front lines like the police and correctional officers and judges, they know more than anybody the limitations and the faults of the justice system. There's so much frustration and so much violence, quite frankly, occurring, and not enough resolution of the underlying causes, and we're not being that successful. So the recidivism rate, generally speaking, is about 70% or more. So that means we're basically failing more than 70% of the time. Yeah. So there's that revolving door syndrome, et cetera. And so offering peace circles has been quite welcomed, actually, to varying degrees. And so it is a voluntary process, which is a strength. So people do need to be willing and choosing that. And so we work alongside the police, the courts, and the prison. And of course, in workplaces alongside arbitration and unions, et cetera, we're not replacing, we're just adding other possibilities. So there's many examples of where it's worked really well, including very serious threats and violence, whether it's among inmates or victims and offenders, or between staff like correctional guards on correctional guards or police on police. I mean, there's so much going on. This is very required. I could say lots more about it, but is there something more specific you want me to speak to, Fred?
How do you, my assumption is that it's, you're dealing with a, an inherently resistant population for to use this kind of thing for that environment. So I'm wondering how you introduce it. How do you introduce it in a prison system? How do you introduce it to a feeling of resolution that the victims of a crime may need? How do you introduce it to law enforcement as a way for them to better work together, not necessarily because of their work, but because they're in a very strenuous or a stressful job environment with each other? So I realize there's about five questions there. You can pick them in any order you want.
I appreciate that. Yeah, these are big, big topics. And I just want to say thank you to you and your radio station for allowing us to be on this, because this is part of the introduction, is bringing awareness to this possibility. And so a lot of people don't know about peace circles. They don't know about restorative justice. And unfortunately, there's a lot of myths and misconceptions. So you had mentioned earlier in the program about the notion of hippies. And the other misconception is that it's very soft and it's all touchy-feely. And so there are myths and misconceptions. So part of it and part of the resistance is literally not knowing about it and then not knowing what it is. And we do struggle with language, and so even using the term peace and circle in and of itself, or restorative justice, you know, it's not obvious what it is, and then there's those stereotypes that come up. So part of what the introduction is education and raising awareness and offering it as a choice. And when people know what it is, generally speaking, there tends to be a lot of support for it, and people tend to go, oh, that makes so much sense. Because it is grounded also not only on profound teachings from around the world, but also on very pragmatic and common sense. And so there's different areas you pointed to. So when you talk about victims and offenders, for example, victims are forgotten in the justice system. I mean, they may be witnesses, but it's all about the offenders. And so this offers an opportunity for victims' voices to be heard directly. And many, most victims, majority of victims, require a desire to have a voice and to be honored and to be included in a meaningful way where they can express, and this is another big gift of circles, is we invite the whole person to be in circle, including the emotions, which is excluded from the justice system. Yeah. And so victims...
Let me interrupt for a second. In a courtroom environment, the victim feels, in most cases, a reasonable level of safety because there are armed marshals there. The perpetrator on trial may indeed be restrained while they're there. I'm wondering how you, I'm sure there's very effective ways to create a safe environment for there to be some resolution between those two sides of a conflict, regardless of what the outcome of a trial was. But my thought is that 95% of the victims are going to inherently feel like there's no way for you really to give them this, the initial safety they need to even have the discussion?
Well, I would respectfully beg to differ. And I think the key thing in all of this is that you and I don't know what each and every victim requires and desires, because everybody experiences victimization differently. And what we forget and what is absolutely essential is that we ask those involved in the conflict or crime, in this case we're speaking about victims, what is it that you require? What is it that you need? And how do we make sure that your needs are fulfilled, not from superiority position of this is what is required, but to engage? And so it's really about empowering all parties involved, and to give them a space and a place to safely move through a process if and as they choose it, to engage as much or as little with the other parties as required and as they choose. So it's a real flip of what we do in the justice system, and it's sometimes hard to get your mind wrapped around it. But you mentioned about where did this all go, you know, how did it disappear, so to speak, or go underground earlier. One big point of this is, and I refer to a famous quote from a Norwegian criminologist, Niels Christie. He wrote an article, I think it was back in 1979, and he said, in effect, that the state stole conflict. And so we can talk about, you know, not in this show necessarily, but the rise of the prison, and you know, we know that's all being documented very well, the justice system, is that it became a crime against the state. And so it became a legal issue. When a crime occurs, you broke a law, and then it's our versus, you know, it's about the state. And so the victims got put aside. And so it then went into the hands of the legal professionals, whether it's lawyers, judges, prison officials. And what we're doing here in Peace Circles and in restorative justice more broadly is saying it's actually the conflicts are owned by those in it. And so what if we put them at the center, especially victims, and created a process that would work for all involved, depending on the crime? So you were focusing on a very specific kind of crime, which is stranger and violent and threatening danger. Most of the crime, don't forget, is not actually ever reported. And most of the crime is often against people that we've met or opportunistic. So there's such a diversity of conflict and crime in and of itself. We can't have a one-shoe-fits-all in this. That's why a peace circle is that intentional design. What's going on with these particular parties in this particular moment with this particular issue or conflict, and how do we work together to make it safe, as you said, and to make it effective and productive as best as we can? So
you bring up a very good point, and as I was hearing you talk about this, so to some extent you're looking at ways to remove the state from the discussion, admirably so, I would say, and make it more of, if you will, a family conflict around the table.
Yes and no. It's usually an and in my world. You'll start hearing some themes as we continue our dialogue. For me, it's yes, to some extent, remove the state, but not entirely. Again, every step I walk is not, it's got to be connected with those teachings, which is why I felt compelled to start there, even though it was such a big topic and I didn't anticipate starting there myself. But really, it's about the teachings or the philosophy or the understanding, the paradigm of, remember, there is no us and them. So it's not state versus us either. It's about how do we do this together collaboratively, take the best of it all. So the state still has a role to play. I'm not an abolitionist. I just know that there needs to be tremendous change at all levels. So I love working with the police, and I spent, you know, a week training judges in Brazil, and I had the intense privilege of spending a week with judges from every state and federal, and it was remarkable. I mean, just remarkable. So it's not that they're wrong and we're right. It's just they can fulfill a particular role. So if there's a constitutional challenge, for example, that probably is a good thing to go to court. So what can we use the courts for, and how do we use the courts? And there's a small, small percentage of the population that for a period of time need to be put away, for an example, in a prison, but we can do that more restoratively, because it's not just a free-for-all, right? It's about incredible accountability. So another part of this whole process is definitely accountability and safety and, you know, resolution to the best of our ability. So it is, though, removing the centrality of the state and making all the decisions for us. And it's elevating all of us to be in a place of empowerment and voice and actually vulnerability as well. So there's lots there. I'll pause. As you can see, I can keep talking. There's so much here. I get very excited about this. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, let me bring Doreen back in the discussion. What do you see your conference attendees being able to walk away with after Evelyn's workshop?
Well, I think a better understanding of what is a peace circle, whether you call it, some people have referred to it as a dialogue circles, talking circles, peace circles. What is it? And I think, Fred, you know, as you said, one of the images is that it's a bunch of hippies sitting around and talking, and it's much more than that. It truly is. And yeah.
I want to interject. I don't believe that's what it is, but I believe that's what a lot of society does believe.
And you're correct. A lot of people I have talked to about it have voiced the same thing. Now, I have to say, when I talk to people in the United States about it, when I go elsewhere in other countries, they're very familiar with this and they utilize it. And so probably people will come away and have a better understanding of what peace circles are and how they are very useful. They're not for every particular situation, but as I said earlier, it's another tool in the toolbox. And hopefully people can actually take some of the skills that they learn from the session and utilize it, whether it's within a family, their friends, and start using it at a local level. One of the things I would love to see is if people come away, get training from Evelyn, and go away and start their own little peace circles to resolve things at neighborhood levels. I think that would be wonderful. But essentially come away, have an understanding about it so that they can talk to other people and educate other people what it is.
Mm-hmm. Evelyn, you alluded to it and I alluded to it, but I want to make sure I've not made an assumption that's not correct. Is a usable tool that you use often or need to use what I would refer to as a talking stick. You may have another name for it, but is in that indeed a tool that gets used to, if you will, for lack of a better word, to use the word, orchestrate the fact that the dialogue stays constructive and people can actually be heard?
Yes, you are correct. And it's being referred to as a talking stick. I refer to it as a talking piece because it can be any object. And it's one of the core tools of our process that's unique to this process. We don't use that in mediation or negotiations or in the courts, for example. So it's one of the signatures. And it is an object that gets passed around the circle, and whoever is holding it is the one to speak. And whoever is not holding it is asked to fully listen and receive what's being said. So in my experience, it does a lot of the work for us. Circles are quite easy. They're very user-friendly. Anybody can do them to some degree. Of course, with the more serious, we need a lot more training. But it is the best mediator in the world, the talking piece. And some refer to it as a listening piece. So there's lots of teachings around that and lots of advantages of why we use that.
Yeah, referring to it as a listening piece, actually, I find fascinating in a very positive way, because as you were speaking and as Doreen was speaking a couple of minutes ago, it occurred to me that one of the big difficulties in true dialogue is the person who is not speaking oftentimes is distracted from the person who is speaking, because the person who's not speaking is already working on their rebuttal. And my thought is that having a piece to carry around or to pass around I cannot come up with a scientific explanation for this, but in my mind, could help people to better pay attention to what's being said, feeling that there's not as much pressure to instantly jump in with a reply, because that kind of instant need for reply, I think, makes us bad listeners often.
Oh, yes. I couldn't have said it better. Thank you so much, Fred. I really appreciate your awareness and sensitivity about all that. Absolutely. And so, again, there's so much we can say just about that. That's a part of the training that we do about, you know, what are the advantages? Why do we use them? How do we use them? And it really is, it's for me, it's a physical embodiment and actualization of those teachings of if we say we're all equal, then, and we don't have hierarchy, then everybody really does need an opportunity to speak and be heard. And it's more the listening that's really important. And it gives it very clear who's speaking, who's not, and there's no cross-talking, because what we're doing is very strategically separating out the debate, you know, the back and forth, and I'm right, you're wrong, which is where we slip into very easily, especially in conflict. We all do that. So what if we literally broadened it out beyond to people going back and forth and into a circle where everybody has something of value to contribute, because we believe everybody does. Everybody has some experience, some insight, some wisdom, maybe some pains. And for me, the way I put it, it's like a puzzle, and we're all pieces. And as we all share the piece that we have in our hearts and our mind and our spirit, then it all comes together into this beautiful tapestry, and we have this tremendous awareness and shift that occurs through the circle as we do pass that around and as we go deeper into that presence and that vulnerability and that sharing. It does invite a very different dialogue, and I use the word dialogue specifically as opposed to something like debate or proving. It's a very different kind of dialogue.
And I also want to interject that one of the things that Evelyn did at the Peace Circle that I participated in was in the very beginning identifying particular, and maybe this isn't the right word, Evelyn, but bias that we're coming into the Peace Circle with, and writing it down and putting it in the middle of the Peace Circle. So, for example, in my particular case, it was to try not to be judgmental about the whole process, have an open mind about it. And it really was helpful because I believe everybody was sharing, they were honest, and we started building trust from the very beginning. And keep that in mind. In my mind, I kept saying, I'm going to not be judgmental about anything, anyone. Keep an open mind. And by the end of the 2 days, there was really a bond that developed between all of us, all the participants that were still in contact with each other. And we had an awareness of things that we didn't have an awareness of. And so it does create a different type of environment than mediations, when I do a mediation, completely different. So it is another way to open up dialogue with people and build trust.
Yeah. As both of you were speaking, as Evelyn was speaking before and you just commented now, it occurred to me that one of the things that for a lot of people may be missing is some of our most profound voices in a situation, in my opinion, but the most profound voices I hear are often people who are also, if you will, the least assertive people in the discussion. And if we take away the need to be assertive to be heard, we get to hear some of those voices that we can't hear otherwise. And I think that's, and that may be a twofold situation in that not only do we get to hear that less assertive voice, but that less assertive voice gets to participate in a way that they may be shunned often from.
That's true. What I've found, again, doing facilitations and mediations, many times people don't want to say anything because they're afraid they're going to be judged. They're afraid they're not going to express themselves. There's not the trust. The difference that I've noticed with the Peace Circle is that early on you build that trust so that you feel comfortable, that when the talking piece comes to you, you feel comfortable that other people are not going to interject. They're not going to make a comment that will make you feel uncomfortable. And again, as you go around this circle, it truly helps to resolve issues. And people who might be shy, less willing to speak out, feel more comfortable in this situation.
Yeah. Let me remind folks, we do have a few minutes left in the program. If you have some observations or questions you'd like to include in the discussion, the phone number is 805-781-3875. We are talking today with Dr. Evelyn Zellerer, who is the founder and director of Peace of the Circle, and also Doreen Labarto, who is a board member of pronounce it for me.
Ecologistics.
Ecologistics. It looks like, it's a mouthful anyway. Yeah. And a partner in Earth Design International. And Evelyn is going to be in on the Central Coast for the Central Coast Bioneers Conference the weekend of November 2, 3, and 4. And we're trying to get a little bit of a head start on what she's going to be talking about. She's with us on the phone from British Columbia because she couldn't get here 2 weeks early, and we understand that.
I would have loved to. Thank you. Yeah. California is so beautiful. And I just want to add, what I've discovered over the years is that peace circles and work for everybody, you know, as long as they're ready and choose it and are willing, of course. But you were pointing to different types of us coming together, and it made me smile when I discovered that it works for both extroverts like me and introverts, mm-hmm. and that we really are developing a different form of leadership. And that everybody is a leader in every chair and in this process. And that it also, I just want to emphasize, when I say for everyone, it goes beyond any political status or any religion or any culture or any race or any age or literacy or education or sexual orientation. What is really quite beautiful is that we can all come to circle and it's all welcomed.
And I think that from what I'm hearing from both of you and what I read from some of the material on your website, Evelyn, is that people who are some of the people who walk away from getting involved in this process with the most desire to continue it are the people who showed up in the room the most skeptical to begin with. And I'm curious how you address those skeptics in when you are introducing the tools that you have and you're introducing a group to work with them for the first time. I'm sure you, as you look around the room, you see the 50-year-old tall guy who's tapping his toe and started tapping his toe the minute you started talking. And I'm wondering how you break down that initial skepticism that comes up.
I'm smiling. This is a moment I'd like to be on video with you. I welcome all the skeptics. Like, I welcome everybody. You just come who you are. You don't have to be anything but who you are and where you are. And I just meet people where they are, and there's no judgment. Doreen mentioned that a moment ago, which is a really central, very deep practice of this, of creating a space of no judgment for people to show up in their messiness, in their vulnerability, in their fears, in their judgments, and whatever else is coming. And then we work with that. That's where we start. And so we don't jump into talking about the issue right away. We very strategically and consciously do a few things that Doreen was mentioning before we have that direct conversation. So we acknowledge people. We do a welcome. We do an opening. We do a check-in round. We connect with our values, because really the most important question I can ask anybody that I work with when we are in this process and meeting is, who do you choose to be? We don't have any control over what others are choosing and what they're saying. We can invite them, we can cajole, we can, you know, push and prod and pull, but ultimately we have 100% control and choice over what we think, feel, behave, and say at any time. And so let's pause and slow down a little bit and say, okay, before we engage in this difficult conversation, what matters most to you when you walk out of this? You're going to have to look yourself in the mirror at the end of the day. What would make you feel good about going to sleep that night and moving forward in life, regardless of what anybody else chooses? So this is a values-based process. And we develop our guidelines together, et cetera. So we use lots of tools. And so I have found with what you call the skeptics, I'm just reminded of a workplace situation where there was a union rep that came because they wanted to check out what we were doing. And I'm like, well, you're more than welcome. But he started out with his arms folded and he pushed his chair back and, you know, and that was fine. Like, okay, that's how you need
to
be. That
was the thought of the guy I was referring to in the references who I was thinking about, yeah.
And I just like, okay, that's where he needs to be for his safety. And this is his judgment. And that's okay. I don't have to buy into his reality. I can continue to be the invitation. And that's really critical and central, is that we be the invitation for others to step forward into this space of connectedness and interconnectedness and resolving whatever conflicts we have in a good way. You know, I'm reminded of a wonderful quote: you can't get to a good place unless you go in a good way. So it wouldn't, I'm not going to fight the skeptics. I'm just going to keep inviting. And so over time, it was interesting, as we did the opening and we did the check-in, we connected with our values, his arms uncrossed and he himself moved his chair back into the circle, because it became very clear that he had excluded himself, and that doesn't feel very good. And so that was that one, you know, small example. So there's various tools and techniques we use, you know, in terms of different people coming in different places, and that's okay.
Yeah, as you said that, it occurred to me that the people who are like that, current in most environments, can maintain their power by their stature, by how loud they are, by how assertive they are. If you create an environment like you're speaking about, that person becomes isolated because their usual tools are not on their palate anymore.
You're brilliant, yeah. Fred. Absolutely brilliant. You get it. Yeah. And that's, see how quick it is. We've just been talking for 40 minutes, and you know, you already get it. This is so, it's such an invitation, and exactly right. We're shifting power dynamics. Yeah. You know, it's so simple. We sit in a circle, pass a talking piece, and we're shifting power dynamics. So it's power with,
And I need to interrupt you. And I need to interrupt you because we don't have a stick. So because I want to, you can't see that I have a caller on hold. So I want to give them an opportunity so we don't run out of time. So hold on a second, okay? And hopefully you can hear them also. So let's see, Hyla from Cambria, you're on the air. Thank you for your patience. You still there? Hello. I don't know. We lost our caller. Sorry about that. Anyway, Hyla, if you happen to hear this, call back in. We'll let you on the air. Okay, sorry about that. They wanted to speak, but we didn't give them an opportunity. I'm not quite sure how that happened. So do you ever end up with a room with this is going to sound cynical, and I'm sorry, and I tend to be cynical, and I'm sorry, that you end up with a room that are all like that individual, and how in the world does that get started? How do you start the process effectively in that kind of room?
Your cynicism is welcome, Fred. See how we just love you anyway. So just the love changes everything. So no, I've actually never had a room full of cynics, because naturally and organically, we're all diverse in humanity. And so, you know, we are the rainbow. And so when you have a circle, you're going to have lots of different personalities and people in different places. And that's just organically what happens. So I've never had a room full of them. You might have a few of them. And I'll just mention another part of the process is, especially if it's difficult conversations, conflict or crime, the first step, well, the first phase of it all is suitability. So there's four main stages. The first is suitability. So before we meet, we're not just going to dump everybody into a room. Like, that's not good practice, and that's not necessarily safe for everybody. So there's a whole phase of
suitability. I'm going to interrupt you again, and I apologize for that, because we do have Hyla back, and we're getting a little low on time. I want to make sure that she gets a chance to speak. So I apologize, and hold on a second.
That's okay. I'll just mention as she's coming that the second stage is preparation. So preparation. The gathering and follow-up.
Okay. We'll get into that a little bit more in a moment. And Hyla, thanks for coming back with us. Sorry about the technical difficulties.
Oh, thank you for having a wonderful discussion, a wonderful subject. And thanks to Evelyn and her friend there. And I was just thinking, it's a great concept, and I know you work in smaller groups, but wouldn't this be great if the Congress would take up some of these meetings the way they always talk, you know? This would be great, I think.
Hyla, I'm from Cambria. I live in Cambria. Wouldn't it be great if we could get some of the local political groups
absolutely.
Together?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
it's true.
My hunch is, Evelyn, that's not the first time this question has been posed to you.
It's not. And again, I'm smiling. Thank you so much for saying that on the air. I am incredibly grateful that you did put that out there. And yes, my answer is absolutely yes. And this is a different form of governance as well.
Yes.
So I mentioned leadership. And yes, what if our leaders actually came together and had these kind of dialogues, facilitated dialogue, tough conversations? And yes,
and
it's possible.
In the earlier part of the program, I was thinking, as you were talking about small groups, I thought about, you know, family, extended family, tribe. And I have heard or read somewhere that about 200 or 300 or so is the limit on what a real community should be to start with. And we have a community here that's got like 3 or 6 or 8 communities. And this would be a good thing to think about, too.
Yeah, we've lost track of neighborhoods in some cases, too, which we should probably get back to.
You're right.
Anyway,
thank you.
Hyla, thanks for your call.
No problem. It was great.
Thank you.
I'm so grateful for that contribution. Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, we can do it with all kinds of numbers. Obviously, the larger the circles, the more we need different facilitators and, you know, concentric circles, and you can be very creative. But yes, I would love this being done throughout the neighborhoods and communities and in governments and in council and in workplaces. I mean, this is such a contribution to different possibilities we have with one another.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Fred, this is the one area that I've been exploring with Evelyn, and that's how do we use this land use and environmental issues, and you've been involved in those, but can we utilize this to help collaborate and facilitate?
Yeah, a lot of personal decisions that we make are based upon the boundaries we set for each other physically, because we can't figure out sometimes how to define the boundaries we need emotionally.
Right.
I think that becomes a factor, too.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're getting down to the last few minutes, and as our regular listeners know, I try and make sure that in about the last that all of my guests get at least a couple of minutes for me to get out of the way. Evelyn, we'll start with you, because I want to make sure that Doreen has a chance to leave everybody with as much knowledge as they can have about what's coming up on the weekend of November 2, 3, and 4. So this becomes the, okay, I'm giving you 2 minutes to make sure that for those people who may not be able to participate in November, what is the most important thing that you would like us to come away with?
Oh, that's a big question. I think what's most important for me right now is to know that this exists and that there's different possibilities available. And so, again, I want to say thank you very much to you, Fred, and for Doreen. That just having these kinds of conversations and opening up possibilities, because we can get, it can be disheartening when we read the news, because the news is focused on all of the horrible things that are going around the world. We don't tend to hear and acknowledge all the incredible, wondrous things that we're doing as humans in this world. And yes, the horror is real, absolutely, and we must be aware of those things. And at the same time, we must also acknowledge the greatness of us and the possibilities that we have, and that we can create a different reality together if we choose it. So please don't give up. Please don't get too disheartened. Please find each other. We're finding each other around the world. There's amazing things going on, and I'm so grateful for Doreen. And we are coming together November 2nd and 4th. There's two different days you can choose from for a one-day workshop with me. It's a great privilege and honor to come. And we can go deeper into this methodology and answer all your questions and look at how we can implement this in different places. And thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being. Know that you are a gift, and we can be a gift to one another. And anything is possible.
I want to insert one question that because some people may not be able to come and hear you in November. I actually will be out of town that weekend, and I'm not happy about that. I'm happy where I'm going, but I'm not happy to miss your conference. Are there either online or in written form tools for people to start doing some personal work, maybe with their families, maybe with their neighborhoods, maybe with an organization they belong to look at ways to make this kind of thing work?
Yes, there are. And you can look at my website, which is peaceofthecircle.com. So peace as in P-E-A-C-E. So peaceofthecircle.com. And there's some books I can recommend. I can maybe pull those out while Doreen is talking, and we can do follow-up with people. So maybe if you contact me with a specific follow-up that you would like, I'm happy. There's an email. You can contact me through the website, and Doreen can share a little bit more about her availability locally with you as well.
Okay, great. Doreen, you want to make sure everybody knows as much as possible about November.
I do. Yes. Thank you, Fred, for having us on. It's really exciting, in particular, to bring Evelyn down here. Ecologistics, as I mentioned earlier, has the Central Coast Bioneers Conference November 3rd. It's going to be at the Oak Glen Pavilion, San Luis Obispo Botanical Garden. And more information on that, please go to www.ecologistics.org. And then, as Evelyn mentioned, two wonderful days, two wonderful workshops with Evelyn, and I invite people to attend. I think it's really going to be a life-changing experience for you.
Okay, great. Okay. Thank you, and thank you for all the information. And Evelyn, thank you for sticking with us on the phone for an hour from British Columbia. And your skills as a communicator have been very effective to convey an awful lot of information. And I'm sure it's better when you're in the room, and you'll be in the room in a couple of weeks. So thank you for being part of the program today. This has been Central Coast Voices. I want to thank everyone for joining us today. I want to remind you that next week, Chris Kington Barker will be your host. As you know, if you're Chris and I sort of trade things off. She'll be speaking with Michelle Call, who's the executive director with GALA, Elisa Feld, who's with Transitions Mental Health Association, and Dr. J. Better Garcia, who's an assistant professor of psychology at Cal Poly University. Dr. Better Garcia is also director of Queer Community Action, Research, Education, and Support. And they're going to talk about a current countywide assessment that's being done, being conducted to look at the mental health challenges for the LGBTQ community on the Central Coast. And it'll be a discussion about mental health issues generally, but also mental health issues specifically as they apply to that population and the challenges they face. As a lot of us know, not everyone welcomes people who are different and diverse than them, and it can affect the mental health of the people who are unwelcoming, but especially the people who are unwelcomed. And that'll be Chris's program next week. As I've told you before, Central Coast Voices is a project of Action for Healthy Communities, a project of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County in conjunction with KCBX. You can listen or read our report called Vital Signs Understanding San Luis Obispo County at actionslo.org. And thank you to Joan Gellert Sargent for helping underwrite the program. You can reach us at voices@kcbx.org or 805-543-2323. I want to thank my guests today, Dr. Evelyn Zeller and Doreen Labarto, for giving us a lot of great information, and I hope that our listeners can participate in November. It'll be a very worthwhile project. Thank you very much. This has been Central Coast Voices. Next up is This American Life, one of my favorite programs. Please stick around.